You're going to be working hard. All set? Great. Good morning, everyone. My name's Julie Fedorchak with the Public Service Commission. We are gathered this morning on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for a regularly scheduled commission meeting, which I'm going to call to order. It is May 20th at... Is it May 20th? No, it's May 19th at 10 a.m. I'm gathered here with my colleagues, Randy Christman and Brian Crosius. And I don't have any, well, my only opening comments are to just make a pitch for the Reliability Tech Conference that we're having tomorrow. We'll be talking about that, finalizing our plans and just refreshing the agenda in our discussion. And I think it's going to be a great discussion. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the opportunity to meet with all these different players and have a really solid discussion about the issues in February that were experienced throughout our region, but also looking forward, what's everybody's role in making sure that we're doing everything possible to prevent that from happening again and from ensuring reliability for all the customers who are paying for it and depending on it. So with that, I'll kick it over to Commissioner Christman, who did a lot of the planning for that tech conference, and I appreciated his vision and insights, and see if you have any thoughts for the opening comments this morning.
Well, that, of course, and we'll be discussing a little bit more during the admin portion of the meeting, as you said. But we have received positive responses from a lot of the players, both within the state and nationally. And so I am really looking forward to exploring a lot of the big questions on maintaining a reliable grid here in the state. So looking forward to that. I also want to take an aside from the work we do here and just acknowledge a great story that got attention, but I don't think enough attention, and that is the University of Mary's hockey program. It is just absolutely amazing in hockey, which I know almost nothing about, except for the fact that it's not a game where a team, you know, runs the table on a whole season. And they didn't, but they almost did. And they played like twice as many games as almost all the other national competitors, ended up getting to host the national tournament at their level, and I think had only one really competitive game in that tournament. They just dominated that level of hockey, and it's only like their second or third year of having hockey there, I think, and one of Beth and my really good friends, Connor Hansen, is one of the players, which is like the only reason I would have been paying attention to hockey, to tell you the truth. But beyond that, the story of University of Mary's hockey program really deserves attention and praise. And it's too bad that it kind of ended after the legislature got done, and so didn't get maybe the kind of attention that some of the other sports stories get in points of personal privilege in the legislature, but I wanted to highlight them here.
Thanks, Randy.
My fellow commissioner being, I know you don't call it board of directors at the University of Maine,
but
a trustee probably was the mastermind behind the program, for all I know.
Actually, I had nothing, next to nothing, actually nothing to do with the program, but being a cheerleader of it, so it is cool, and serving on the Board of Trustees, and we had a meeting last week, so I got to hear some of the interesting pieces kind of behind the scenes about that program and that national conference tournament. And what's neat about it is they weren't going to have the tournament because the host city was on lockdown with COVID, so the conference put out an opportunity for others to bid on it. And Mary, being a small town and relatively new participant, really didn't have much opportunity to bid on that type of a thing. But they put the bid in with full support from, you know, Monsignor Shea and the athletic director, like, let's do it. See, we're open. And they got it, and they did some amazing things. Like, they just really did an outstanding job in hosting the tournament, which is not something you'd necessarily see. But they really supported all the local restaurants, which have been hard hit during COVID, and used they didn't ask them for donations. They actually purchased the food and gave them business. And then my personal, and they hosted it with, you know, one of the hallmarks of University of Mary and the Benedictines is hospitality. And so that's a big deal, no matter what kind of an event they're having, is making sure everybody feels comfortable and welcome and loved. And so hospitality was a big thing. So one of the extra things that they did that this conference has never done is they had a day of service for the final four teams on they had a down day on the Sunday before the national championship. And the league folks were kind of like hesitant to do it and said, no, we really don't want to do that. And University of Mary said, well, yeah, we've got it all planned and we're going to do it. So bring your players and your coaches and we'll, and they did backpacks. They filled backpacks for the Backpacks for Kids program. And it ended up being such a great experience for everybody that now the league is going to instill that in all of the national tournaments. Mm. So I thought that was a nice little stamp that the University of Mary was able to put on it, a little unique perspective. And it certainly doesn't hurt these athletes to give back in the communities where they're at. So anyway, thanks for mentioning that. And I'm glad that I had recently heard about some of the other things that I could share as well. So. Commissioner Crosius.
Not a lot to add. Congratulations to the University of Mary. That's pretty cool. And North Dakota knows hockey.
Yes. All right. With opening comments concluded, we've got a couple items on the consent agenda. And the meeting minutes from May 5th. I move we pass those.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. All right, moving into the exhaustive regular agenda with one whole item on it, and it's in my portfolio. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Bridger Pipeline LLC 8-inch crude oil pipeline, McKinsey County, citing application case number PU-20-430.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. On October 21st, Bridger Pipeline filed with North Dakota Public Service Commission a combined application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for an approximately 29.4-mile-long crude oil pipeline located in McKinsey County. This pipeline includes approximately 2.4 miles of steel crude oil transmission line new construction. Turn my heater off. And to convert an existing approximately 27-mile steel crude oil gathering line that was constructed in 2018 and converting that from a gathering to a transmission line, all of these are located in McKinsey County. The project will transport crude oil from Johnson's Corner Terminal to Bridger's existing Wilson Station approximately 7 miles south of Watford City. From there, the crude oil will be transported to Guernsey, Wyoming for further marketing and transportation nationally. The project will be 8 inches diameter steel pipe with a wall thickness of 0.312 inches and 0.5 inches in bored locations and a maximum operating pressure of 1440 pounds per square inch. Let's see. The project will have a flow rate of up to 50,000 barrels per day, and the estimated cost is $21 million. Bridger initiated correspondence with all the variety of federal, state, and local agencies regarding the project. They conducted a Class 1 cultural resource literature review and a wildlife and habitat desktop analysis across a one-mile area centered on the project route. They also conducted surveys, field surveys, across a 300-foot-wide corridor centered on the project route and identified, centered on the project route. They conducted surveys for wildlife, threatened and endangered species, critical habitats, wetlands, water bodies, noxious weeds, and trees, saplings, and shrubs. Bridger also conducted an aerial raptor nest survey on an approximately 2-mile-wide area centered on the pipeline, and they conducted a Class 3 cultural resource inventory across the survey area. That's a field survey. They filed those results with the North Dakota State Historic Preservation Office, and in October, the SHPO found the report acceptable and stated that there's been a good faith effort to avoid impacts to significant sites, provided the avoidance recommendations in the report are followed. So Bridger's studies and surveys did not record any exclusion areas within the survey area. They did identify one type of avoidance area, and that is historic landslides. They were analyzed across the study area, and this analysis identified 10 areas with historic data points near or within the survey area, historic data points for landslide data. So Bridger's engineering consultant assessed data from these locations and concluded that none of these areas are geologically unstable, and they didn't find any other avoidance areas within the survey area. There were two cultural resource sites within the survey area, but Bridger testified that the project will not impact these cultural sites, and SHPO concurred with that. The existing pipeline crossed 5 named creeks, which were all crossed using the horizontal directional drilling technique. For the new construction, Bridger will cross water bodies with standing water and adjacent wetlands using the HDD technique as well. They have developed several project control documents that will be used in connection with the construction and operation of the project, including a McKenzie County Weed Management Plan, an amended combined operated systems oil spill response plan, and a stormwater pollution prevention plan. Let's see, Bridger testified that as part of its annual system monitoring, all pipeline infrastructure rights of way are reviewed for erosion and slumping. Additionally, periodic geotechnical evaluations are conducted along various points of Bridger's utility corridors in McKenzie County as part of Bridger's annual monitoring efforts, and if otherwise necessary, following observations from rights-of-way inspections. This was an area that we spent a fair amount of time talking to the company about because this goes through some rugged terrain, as do several of their other pipelines, and they have experienced some sloughing that caused some damage to previous pipelines. So the company really has focused in on their efforts in these potentially geographically unstable and seem to have a pretty ongoing monitoring system in place for mitigating any future concerns in those with that type of geology. The project will have a leak detection system comprised of a line balancing system with transmitters that monitor pressure and density, among other things. A supervisory control and data acquisition system will allow Bridger to monitor the project 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and 365 days a year by trained controls personnel. The system will monitor the flow and pressure of the system and will allow Bridger to identify and respond to situations outside normal operating conditions. 4 of the 7 block valves can be remotely operated. Bridger will coordinate with local emergency response officials, and they will participate with the North Dakota One Call notification system. So, in summary, we had a thorough review of this project, both the converted portion of it and the new construction. It's another nice piece of transportation, external of the state transportation network, pipeline transportation network for crude oil produced in the Bakken. This is, the preferred way of transporting this product by pipeline away from the public, off the roads. It has the least environmental impact by far of any other transportation method, and it's really important to permit and monitor these pipeline operations and ensure that they are safely constructed and operated for the duration. And I feel very comfortable with the company's plans and am pleased to see continued investment in North Dakota's pipeline infrastructure. So with that, I think I am, for one, prepared to support this order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I support the order as well. I am thinking ahead to future cases, though, and in this case, there's mention of the 20-foot buffer alongside the route, and I guess I've always thought that there has to be some flexibility. I mean, they can't necessarily plan a route and get everything within an exact inch. Something must deviate a little bit, and so what is reasonable? And I don't know if we've done this, made mention of that before, but this allows them that little bit of flexibility and does make mention that that's contingent upon not impacting an avoidance area, which I think is really, really important. Because, frankly, if their route is, as we discussed in the work session, is within 500 feet of a residence or something, well, then you don't have a 20-foot buffer because we're not making that avoidance, that setback requirement any less by this. Mm-hmm. If there would be exclusion areas in the area on future cases, I think we might have to add that point with regard to exclusion areas. And that's why I bring it up. If we do start using this as kind of a standard, that there is a little bit of flexibility, I think we got, in future cases, we'll probably need to clarify that that includes exclusion areas as well.
I definitely agree with you, Randy. I think that this order, though, does include their construction activities must not impact an exclusion area. The last sentence of order provision number 3.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that is covered, and the reality is we don't have the authority to allow them to impact an exclusion areas. So even if we didn't say it, that doesn't mean they'd be able to do it.
I guess it's
but I like saying it.
Or maybe
as
didn't
emphasis.
Quite read far enough.
I think it's important that the public understands as well that construction is still within the approved corridor. The ground that is carefully reviewed and vetted prior to construction and approval of a permit. So within that corridor, this isn't, I wouldn't define this as a haphazard approach by any stretch. I think it's still very specific, and there will be things during construction that the company finds where they have to shift. So I think we'll carefully watch this to see how it plays out, but I think it's a very reasonable approach, again, with very thorough inspection within the corridor.
And oftentimes those adjustments are at landowners' requests to leave a little room there for me to do something.
Right. It's pretty consistent with the spirit of the footprint law.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
In that it, you know, requires them to notify us if there's impact to an avoidance area, and they need to get written authorization for us prior to that, prior to impacting an avoidance area. So I think it's a good approach too.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. All right, that concludes the regular agenda. I suppose you guys are going to want a break after all that hard work.
We'll heavy lifting.
Gavel out and take a couple questions from our local reporter, and then Jason.